This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. Raleigh writer Angela Davis Gardner loves Japan. She went there to teach when she was a young woman fresh from her undergraduate studies at Duke. The landscape and people stayed so deeply in her imagination that she's gone back several times. Her most recent books are set in Japan. Plum Wine examines the aftermath of World War II. And her new book, Butterfly's Child, moves between Japan and the United States at the end of the 19th century and into the 20th. It focuses on the life of a boy named Benji. He is the son of the characters at the heart of Puccini's opera, Madame Butterfly. In the novel, Angela Davis Gardner imagines what would have happened to that child after the curtain falls on his mother's suicide. And Angela Davis Gardner joins me in the studio today to talk about Butterfly's Child. Welcome back. Good to have you here.
Thank you, Frank. It's great to be here.
It's been a while. Now, we've been riveted by the news. I want to talk about the book, but I know you care a lot about Japan and have a lot of friends. Have you been in touch with friends there? How are they?
I have. I've managed to make contact with everyone but one friend who was a survivor of Hiroshima, and I'm quite worried about her. I know she's okay, but I know she's emotionally torn apart. But I have talked to several other friends about the situation there. I'm just amazed by their stoicism. One told me that she's living in Tokyo. She said she has almost no water. There's nothing in the food in the stores, but she can stand it because others are in such desperate straits.
Yeah. So people are actually looking around them to see how others are taking this and what condition others are
right,
in.
Right, and helping others. Yeah. Though as the radiation fears grow, another person has said she might like to come to America to stay with me. So
that is a deeply tragic irony in all of this, that once again Japan is facing a nuclear threat.
Right, the place of the first exposure to nuclear radiation should be suffering this. It's just
do you get a sense in talking to your friends what the greatest fears are, that the recovering from this or the impending disaster?
The impending disaster, which they feel they're not hearing the full story about. And, that's so deep a fear, it's really not being talked about that
much.
Well,
let's talk about your book, Butterfly's Child. You taught in Japan many years ago, you've been interested in Japan. Plum Wine was set in Japan. And in fact, it was something about Plum Wine, at least in the immediate aftermath, that got you and Madame Butterfly. Tell us the story of how this book came about.
I was at an opera showing on the big screen, high-definition screen, of a performance of Madame Butterfly with a friend of mine. And she said afterwards, "I wonder what happened to Butterfly's Child." And I thought, oh, yes, that's the next book for me, because I was immersed in Japan. And it's just the kind of material that fascinates me, because I immediately thought, what a complicated family that would make. Pinkerton going with his lover's child.
You should give us the summary now, Madame Butterfly, what you're doing.
Right.
Pretend the American sailor.
Right. Butterfly, a geisha, lived with an American sailor, Benjamin Franklin Pinkerton, in Nagasaki. And he left. She was expecting him to come back. Meanwhile, she had a child whom she named after the father, Benji. And he did return, but with an American wife, Kate. And in the opera, she was so distraught, brokenhearted, that she killed herself. And then my story takes up after that, when I decided that Frank and Kate would take the boy with them to America. So I follow him through his life, early life in America on a farm in Illinois, and then he runs away to Japan to try to look for his mother's family.
So a lot of complexity here, both the bi-location, we're in Japan. Mm-hmm. Why Illinois?
I had a sense that would be a place a sailor might want to settle, with that wide horizon and the flowing grain. And it turned out I was right. I learned that in my research. And I had lived there, so I had some notion of what it felt like, what it looked like. I had to do a lot of research, of course, to make it accurate.
And you chose a town with echoes with your previous book.
Yes. This was very serendipitous. I was in Illinois doing research at archives, and I found an old map of the county where I was going to set the book, and on it was the name Plum River. And I was just immediately drawn to it because of Plum Wine. So I went looking for it, and I found that it was a ghost town. There was nothing there but one sign. And I thought, well, good. Nobody can contradict me. I can make up a little settlement here. And I found a house place. No house there, but it was set on a rise with trees around it. And it looked out over a meadow with a little creek, Plum River Creek, running through it, and plum trees all along the creek. So I thought, this is it. And I was totally inspired, and that's where I began.
Does seeing the place help bring the story to life for you?
I have to see it. And in Nagasaki, I had to find a place where Benji lived.
So. And what happens in that moment, or is it over time in that? Do you have to revisit the place to be inspired, or once you've seen it, you got it?
Once I've seen it, that's it.
Yeah. So let's talk about these characters now. Frank, Kate, and Benji. Tell us about each of them.
Frank, a sailor, has been a ladies' man as he's roamed the world. He tires of the Navy and decides to settle down with Kate. I got to know him much better during the book. He's been mistreated by his father. That's why he ran away from the farm to join the Navy. At the beginning of the book, he's an alcoholic, and he's in the book, he's racked with guilt about Butterfly and still longing for her. Kate grew up in the town of Galena, which was in a cosmopolitan place to live, not used to farm life, and aware of her husband's distance and understanding the reason for his distance. She knows he's obsessed with Butterfly. Benji is longing for his mother and Japan, and he's friendless in America at first. There's a lot of prejudice against the blonde Japanese. And the family has ambivalent feelings towards him, so there's a lot of conflict and back and forth. Benji, however, has great resources, and he's very intelligent. And in the course of the book, he finds some good friends.
Will you read for us?
Sure, I'd love to. This is the first chapter, following Butterfly's suicide. And here we have the beginning of trouble in the book as Frank and Kate take Butterfly's child, Frank and Butterfly's child, home to raise in America. It's also the beginning of conflict for Benji and his identity as a Japanese American. The mother has named the boy Benjamin after his father. And this is the beginning of this chapter. Kate imagined how odd they must appear to people who strolled past them on deck, casting covert glances their way. A blonde, blue-eyed man and woman sitting in silence. On the man's lap, a child with a Japanese face and light hair. All three of them motionless, staring out at the sea like revenants, the boy immobile as a statue, clutching a multicolored string ball. She drew her blanket more tightly about her shoulders. She should say something. They would look less strange in conversation. "How can it be so cold in May?" she asked, trying to smile. "The black current," Frank said. "Kuro, Kuroshiwo." He made a snaking motion with one hand. "It's a mysterious shifting current that runs along the coast of Japan and then out to sea. We should be leaving it soon." She gazed out at the gray water, the dark line of Japan receding, then at the boy. Yesterday they had carried him kicking and biting to the hotel. This is after the suicide. But he hadn't made a sound since recovering from the sedation. The doctor said he was in profound shock. How much did the doctor know about the circumstances, she wondered. Poor child. She looked at him, his small hands gripping the ball as if his life depended on it. "What shall we call him?" she said. They were to sit at the captain's table tonight and hadn't discussed how to introduce the boy. "He can't remain Benjamin. It would be a clear signal to the world that he's your child. Everyone knows you were named for Benjamin Franklin." Frank said nothing. He was uncomfortable, of course, she thought, racked with guilt, but they had to discuss this bizarre situation. It was his responsibility after all. "God help me," she prayed silently. She must remember that he had married her and not that awful woman. It would be one thing if he looked entirely Japanese, she said. Remember your promise. The condition under which she'd agree to take the boy home with them was that no one would know his parentage. Frank, she said. Yes, darling, he looked at her. Today his eyes were gray, but they could be blue or blue-green, depending on the surroundings and his mood. From looking at the sea for so many years, he told her. He reached beneath the blankets to take her gloved hand. I agree. Anything you say. What about a simple Japanese name? Surely he has one. Ask him. Frank spoke to the boy in halting Japanese. Benji, the boy said. It was the first word he had spoken. You could give him a Japanese name, Kate said. It would make life harder for him in America to have a Japanese name. Well, an American name, then. They considered William, David, Michael, then settled on Tom. One syllable, easy for the boy to learn. What do you think, Tom? Frank said, giving the boy a little shake. Anata no namai wa tamu desu ne. The boy turned, holding up the ball so it blocked his view of Frank's face. Watashi wa Benji, he screamed. He rolled off Frank's lap and went flying down the deck. Frank took off after him. Kate unfurled her blankets and followed. She found Frank at the back of the ship, gazing about frantically. The deck was empty, the boy nowhere in sight. Perhaps he had leapt overboard. Anything was possible, she thought. He was in a state of lunacy. She scanned the wide fan of wake behind the ship. Here he is, Frank yelled. He had found him squatting behind a large spool of rope. The boy was sucking on his ball, his eyes closed. Frank lifted him out. Benji it will have to be for the time being, he said. He shouldn't get his way with tantrums, she whispered, glancing at a couple walking past. The woman, wrapped in fur, stared at them avidly. The man tipped his hat with a slight superior smile. He'll be spoiled beyond salvation. It's not just a tantrum, Frank said. Remember what happened to the boy. I'm not likely to forget, she said.
Angela Davis Gardner reading from her latest novel, Butterfly's Child. It's a remarkable insight in there. You know, when we think about kids growing up with conflicted identities, how tough it is. My imagination begins at school, where they're being called names, or they don't know which, you know, where to sit, which lunch table to join.
Right.
But the idea of naming, and this the one phrase there that really got me, let's call him Tom. It'll be easy for him to remember. Mm-hmm. If you, no child born to you, you wouldn't say that. You'd
right.
treat them as some other species,
yes.
right? That
mm-hmm.
couldn't really manage a complex name.
Right, exactly. They weren't really thinking about him at yeah. that point.
But their own. You have thought about this, these ideas of complex identities, as someone who's grown up in the Jim Crow South.
Yes.
And the idea of Japanese Americans, even, and their treatment of this country.
Right. I always wanted to write a book about race relations in the South and never had an idea come to me. And I feel that I've transferred a lot of my passion about fairness to the situation for Japanese Americans. We're very badly treated in America in the early 1900s and then after the war, too, of course. A complex situation, but still in the early, in these years that I'm writing about, there was a lot of anti-Japanese sentiment.
I'm wondering what happened and how things came along for you as a writer, that whole naming sequence that you just read. Did you go through all that? What am I going to name this kid? Or did you begin by imagining this conversation between husband and wife?
I thought he would be named Benji. And then I thought, as I began to write the scene, I thought, well, Kate would not want him to be called Benji because that would identify him with Frank. And that remains her shame throughout the book, her fear that people will know.
The point of view from the book moves from character to character.
Yes.
That come from Faulkner by any chance?
It did, yeah. Yes. I was living in Illinois, in fact, and taking a seminar on Faulkner, and my paper was on As I Lay Dying, in which the point of view changes from character to character. And I love that novel, and I was missing the South. And I was thinking, if I ever start writing, someday I want to write a book that shifts point of view like this with strong individual voices.
This book shows remarkable control. It's so much fun to read, and yet we've talked about the complexity inherent in it. Is that a struggle for you? Do you have to go back and kind of smooth over parts or see where you've dug yourself into a hole and have to get yourself out?
Well, sure. I had to make sure that there was continuity, but the time was the most difficult thing, lining up the time sequence that all the characters were living in and make sure that made sense, both in America and in the Japanese sequences. And my editor helped me with that a lot. She drew out a big time chronological table and said, okay, this is not working here. So I had to adjust in those ways.
You do an awful lot of research for your books. Do the facts get in the way of a good story, as we say in journalism?
No, I just get inspired by certain facts and take them with me. And I want it to be completely accurate, but I haven't had that problem.
Frank's mother also lives with them on the farm. What kind of a role does she play?
She plays a role of adding to the conflict at first between Frank and Kate. She's opposed to Kate, and Kate is afraid that she guesses about Benji's parentage. And at first, the mother-in-law is very wary and suspicious of the boy, but she comes to be very fond of him and befriends him. So that's one of the stable relationships that the poor boy has during these years.
It's interesting, too, to see what happens with these characters, the worry that the secret will get out. In some ways, your own identity is attached to not who you are, not what you've been, but what other people might think if
right.
another story gets out.
Yes, exactly. It's that's at the heart of this book is identity and who you really are and who other people think you are. And there's a scene in which Frank and Benji have an argument, and Benji said Benji has been told that he is not Frank's child, but he knows better. And there's an argument, and he says, why do I have to call you Father Pinkerton, the name made up for him, when you're really my father? And Frank says, I'm not your father. And so that causes great anguish for him.
And place is so important. I mean, in a lot of ways, and I'll say this in the same way that you found Plum River is something you can't contradict. This feels like a Southern novel to me in the sense that it's place such an important part.
Well, I grew up in the South. I was very influenced by Southern literature, especially Eudora Welty and setting and family relationships are the center of my writing, no matter where the book is set.
I want to take you back to your teaching days in Japan, because there's a great story that you tell about a student of yours, or teaching students about Original Sin, but then a translator, someone who helped you with Plum Wine, had an interesting insight on our concept of Original Sin.
Yes. I was teaching Hawthorne. These were Japanese college students, and they could not grasp the concept of Original Sin. It was really a puzzle to them. And one of my colleagues who had lived through Hiroshima and who helped me with Plum Wine said that she thought Original Sin was, she called it, Adam, A-D-A-M, equals atom, A-T-O-M, meaning that human curiosity has gotten us in a lot of trouble, and it led to the splitting of the atom and mankind, human nature extending way beyond what it's capable of controlling.
For good and ill, yeah. So is your next book set in Japan?
It's probably set in North Carolina, and then maybe another one in Japan, too.
We are looking forward to both of them.
Thank you,
Come
Frank.
Back. Thank you so much, Angela.
Thank you.
Angela Davis Gardner, the author of Butterfly's Child. She's going to read from her newest book Sunday, March 20th at Quail Ridge Books and Music in Raleigh. That's at 3 o'clock on March 20th, Quail Ridge. Going to be at the Regulator in Durham Thursday, March 24th. And then in Chapel Hill, Flyleaf Books on March 31st. For more information, if you didn't get all that, go to angeladavisgardner.com. Gardner is spelled G-A-R-D-N-E-R. Coming up after a short break, the Lee Boys play live. Stay with us on The State of Things.